You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to This Catholic Life podcast, and I am your host, Rosalie Contrite of the Contrite Catholic blog. You can always find me at www.contritecatholic.com. Well, I had some show notes somewhere around here, but I'm fairly certain that a toddler probably ate them or something. Speaking of toddlers, always have a story, always. I was at the pharmacy recently. Sometimes I dare to go in public with my children. It's like an Olympic sport. It's that grueling. But we were standing in line, and she said this.
Mom, you have chickenpox on your face.
What? Show me. I have chickenpox?
Yes.
No one's going to want to be my friend if you keep telling everybody that.
She's got a special little laugh. Anyhow, so we're waiting in line and she says, I have chicken pox, which number one, I don't have chicken pox. I had chicken pox when I was like five. It was awful. And number two, why does she think I have it? So I realize that what she's pointing out are actually blemishes and I'm just super broken out. So way to make me feel awesome. Adult acne, the gift that keeps on giving. You get to worry about acne and wrinkles. It's a cruel twist of nature. Anyhow, people were making eye contact with me and like turning around and running the other direction. People really thought I had chicken pox. So it was really awkward. And I tried to explain to her, no, these are just acne or they're owies. But she's like, no, chicken pox. So we just had to go home. I couldn't even wait in line because people were upset that I couldn't say I didn't have chicken pox. They wouldn't have bought it. I just want to preface this really quickly that I am interviewing in the synod of this episode a woman who lives in Wales, so we are separated by quite a bit of time, and because of that there is some lag in our discussion and I sound a little bit distracted and I apologize for that. Sometimes I just say some really awkward stuff and you're like, what? Is she drunk? Like, what is wrong with her? She's terrible. I apologize. We just tried our very hardest to make it interesting, but I really think if you listen, it is just fascinating. Hello, everybody. We are back at the Synod, and I am here with Rosie. She is a Catholic mom who lives in Wales. She has five children. Would you like to say hi, Rosie?
Hello.
All right. And Rosie is an Eastern Catholic. So for everybody who doesn't know what that means, there are, I think there's 22 or 23 rites in communion with Rome. And I think, are you Byzantine?
I'm Ukrainian Greek Catholic.
Ukrainian Greek. So it's more diverse. So there's, yes. And so all of these churches are 100% in communion with Rome. They have valid sacraments. They just do a little different dance, essentially. But with her unique perspective, I wanted to have her on the show to fill you guys in on just different Catholic culture. So I was hoping you could tell us some of the things that you notice immediately that are different between Ukrainian Greek and Roman Catholicism.
I think the first thing you're going to notice is when you walk into a divine liturgy, it's going to look and feel nothing like your Mass. You know, there's incense everywhere. You know, everyone's standing up. The service is all sang. You're going to see a lot of the Eastern icons. So that's your kind of your, from a first impressions point of view. Mm-hmm. That would be the main thing. It's going to look and feel like an Orthodox church when you go in. In fact, we have had Roman Catholics come and then leave, thinking they accidentally walked into an Orthodox church. I had another couple come in, and they were trying to figure out if they were in, you know, an Orthodox church or a Catholic church, and they keep saying, and we're praying, like, you know, we're praying for the Pope of Rome, and they're like, okay, so maybe they are, you know, but then they're not sure. It doesn't feel like Mass, you know, and can we receive? Are we allowed to receive? You know, so I think that's the first thing. It does feel like an Orthodox church, because ultimately we are Orthodox churches in communion with the Bishop of Rome, as opposed to being Roman Catholics.
So. That's really interesting. And your communion, is it leavened or unleavened?
It's leavened, I believe.
Okay, yeah. And do you guys use the tincture and the spoon for receiving, or is that different?
We do, yes, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how that's different, just for listeners?
Well, you know, obviously in the Roman Catholic Mass, you would walk up, if you want to receive on the tongue, you mm-hmm. would, I suppose, put your hands together, or, you know, if you're receiving in the hand, you know, you're putting, I think it's your one hand on top of the other. You'll have to help me out with that one.
Yeah. If there's a way to do that correctly, I don't know it.
No, and the priest at the local church, he always reminds me, I have to say amen before I receive, and I always forget because I'm not Roman Catholic and everything. And so when you go to receive at an Eastern Catholic church, something you may notice and be very confused about is we receive often with our hands crossed across our chest, which to a Roman Catholic would mean that you don't want to receive.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You just want to get a blessing. So that's some big things. We're going to cross, and we'll come up before the Eucharist services. We'll do a cross, sign of the cross, and then the deacon or an old server will hold a cloth underneath your chin, mm-hmm. and you open your mouth, and then the priest will have the chalice, which has the precious blood and the body in the chalice together, and both are put on the spoon and go into your mouth.
So it's a one-stop shop.
It is, exactly. Yeah.
And I've heard that the spoon is symbolic of, like, Mother Church feeding the followers. Is that something you've heard?
It's not. You may just know more than me about it, because we're quite this ourselves, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just thought that sounded really beautiful, and I like the idea of the one-stop shop.
Yeah, there's really nothing in the Eastern Catholic Church that doesn't have a story behind it. Everything is intentional.
It's so rich, everything. You'll never walk into any, whether it's Orthodox, Catholic, or even Coptic, these churches are just full of culture. And I love all the incense. I love incense. So, yeah. See, everyone always tells me that I'm an Eastern Catholic at heart, but I recently heard I can't become one. Once you're a Roman Catholic, evidently you can't jump, so I don't know. But were you always an Eastern Catholic? What's your story?
No. See, I grew up, I was christened in the Church of England. And then, when I was about 17, I started going to an evangelical church. And then when I was 19, I married my husband, who was a Christian and Missionary Alliance. Some of you may recognize that denomination. And he served as a pastor within that denomination. And then we kind of started our conversion story, kind of thought about becoming Orthodox for a while, and ended up as Papists.
And was there anything, a moment in time, anything that convinced you that this was the right way to go?
I think it was a very gradual journey. I think my heart was there before my head was. When we were quite newlywed and still only had, like, one child, we met some Catholics, and we thought they were the nicest Catholics we'd ever met. And, you know, we thought they must be, you know, like good Catholics. You know, like, we think these Catholics are saved, you know. And we thought, well, maybe if we, you know, evangelize to them, we can, like, you know, convert them over away from Catholicism. But very quickly, the as I spent time with these ladies and saw the way they lived their lives and the way their marriages were and the way they parented and their approach to life, I found this deepness and richness that I felt lacked and was missing within my evangelical experience.
That was something I felt, too, when I was exploring Christianity. Of course, I was coming at this all from an atheist, so I looked at Judaism, I looked at Catholicism, and I looked at Islam, and I wanted to look at them all fairly. And when I went into Christianity, it really seemed to me that if I wanted to be a Christian, I had to be Catholic, because all of these other denominations, it seemed like a religious immaturity, like there was no depth to the theology. It was very thin. And when I see all the dimensions in Catholicism, I'm just blown away. I'm like, do you guys know this? Like, I want to run up to everybody just on the street. Do you know? So it's pretty intense. But something very different and somewhat hotly debated in Roman Catholicism that you guys have in your church is a married priesthood. And I was wondering if you could tell me about that, what you know about it, what you think about it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So within the Eastern Catholic Church, you know, when you, for example, let's go back to Roman Catholicism, you grow up and you discern, you know, am I going to be in the religious life? Am I going to be a priest? You know, am I going to be a nun, or am I going to be, you know, a monk? Whereas in the Eastern Catholic Church, what you're going to find is when you're discerning whether to be a monk or a priest, is there are two distinct roles there. And the monk, he's going into a monastic life. And generally, when you have a priest, he is entering, you know, the family life. And the family life means being a part of a family. Now, one thing that we need to distinguish is that a married man can be a priest, but a priest cannot become married. So you, any holy orders, even being a deacon, for example, you then have to remain in the same state. So if you are single when you become a deacon, then you must then remain single. If you are married and you become a priest or a deacon, and then you become widowed, then you must not then remarry. So I was chatting a bit with our own priest today, mm-hmm. Asking him a little bit. I said, I know they're going to want to know about married priests, but I don't feel I can speak to that. And he said, well, I don't find it a conflict. I find that the family life beautifully complements, you know, my life as a priest. It's just a different way of approaching things, I suppose. And historically, priests in the East have always married.
And I think you'll find in the Roman Rite, there were priests that married. I'm not exactly sure when the practice started. And we do have some married priests, if they enter in through, there's a provision for Anglican pastors, perhaps Lutheran too. So we see it a little bit, but I agree with your pastor's statement. I have a priest near me and he has children and grandchildren. He is, like you were saying, he is a widow. And so he decided after his wife passed away, he wanted to enter into the priesthood, and he did. So he's got this kind of unique perspective. I love to go to talk to him about my marital frustrations, and I love to go to masses with him because he knows when the kids are losing their minds because he has children. And I think that's very special. And of course, we could get into the theological intricacies, and I know this is so hotly debated. People are going to write me. They're going to be angry. But I think it's just so interesting. Would you say a good percentage of the priesthood is married? Only a part? Are there rules about how many people can or anything like that?
In my experience, most of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic priests I have met have been married. I have met unmarried priests in the Ruthenian or, you know, Byzantine Church of America. Mm-hmm. Some of the churches tend to lean away from married priests, but the Ukrainian Greek Catholics do have a lot of married priests. Now, a bishop cannot be married.
Okay.
Is an important distinction to make. Also,
do you think that's because of his workload, or is that tradition? Do they?
I think it is because it is an increased responsibility and amount of, you know, work, and your responsibility before God needs that extra focus.
Sure. And does the parish then support the family, or how does that work for their salary?
I think that a lot of the Eastern Catholic churches are so tiny. The two that I've been in, the priests have also worked full-time on top of their duties as a husband and as a priest.
Oh, man. They just must never sleep. Oh, wow. I cannot even imagine that. And then, of course, do they have a lot of kids? I assume that they would, but...
let's see. Again, the two priests I have experienced one had five children, and he had a beautiful wife who home educated them all. And then our current priest, they have eight children who are the most delightful children you could ever meet. And the sons serve at the altar with him.
Oh, that's so special.
Yeah, and the eldest son is a cantor, and it's just beautiful.
It's a family affair. I want to see this. Do you think you could bring me? We could just Skype in mass. There's nothing wrong with that. Something else that I did want to talk to you about is the United Kingdom has a bit more religious diversity than the United States. And how I mean that is overall in the United States, with very little exception, you're going to find Christianity is the most common. It's the dominant everywhere. And so I wanted to know what it was like practicing as a Catholic or a Christian in the United Kingdom, because you do have such a large Muslim population. Does that affect it at all? Do you feel differently about it?
I think what's interesting, my experience in the USA was that most people you meet have some level of identification with the Christian faith. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the UK, you find that people are quite detached from Christianity at this point, and in terms of religious conversation, mm-hmm. the best religious conversations you end up having and the people you do have more in common with, and this is going to be a controversial opinion, is the Muslims. Mm-hmm. Because there is a way of living your faith when you're devout in your faith that affects the way that you live and the way that you think. And while there are major tenets of Islam that are going to differ from Catholicism, there are a lot of things that we do have in common. Mm-hmm. And as a minority, to be a devout person of a faith in the UK, we are minorities, that sometimes we do rely on each other for support and help, and definitely opening conversations for further understanding of each other over here. As you say, we do have a very large Muslim population.
That is really beautiful. I wish that we felt like that. You know, we have much more in common with other peoples of faith, no matter what it is, than we do with people who don't have faith. And I feel like we're missing out on allies that we have and people who we could form, you know, good relationships with. Another question that I had for you is, in the United States, abortion topics are very politicized, and I'm sure you know that. Do you feel that's the same over there? Is it tied up with religion over there? People are less religious. What is it like?
I feel like it's not so much of a conversation here. Abortion has been legal a long time. you know, it is provided by the NHS.
What, do you know what year it became legal?
I don't specifically. I don't feel like it's something that's ever going to change. It's not something that comes up in elections.
So you don't have, like, protesters or people who are pledging to end it or anything like that?
I would disagree with that. I mean, we still have 40 days for life.
Oh, okay, you do.
Yeah, I mean, the Catholics and the Christians are definitely, want it, would love to see change. But in terms of it being an integral part of political conversation and strategy, the way it is in the US, you know, because people often base their votes on the issue of abortion in the USA, whereas in the UK, if you read through a political manifesto, you're unlikely to find a huge amount on the subject. There's definitely that debate on the the nitty-gritty details of, you know, how many weeks and under what conditions abortion is allowed. But people do have, the 40 days for life. They can get quite heated and quite aggressive, quite a lot of conflict towards people. I have a friend who has participated, you know, and will not take her older children to them whenever she does go and pray for the unborn at the specific events. So
it gets pretty loud. So then the government pays for this procedure.
I mean, you can go to a pharmacy. We have a sign right now, for example, at the pharmacy. You can just go in and get your Plan B at no cost. If you go to your doctor, you can request an abortion. I may be wrong on this, but I do believe that it is not beyond the first trimester, unless there is a major disability or health concern that is discovered at their 20-week anatomy scan.
Okay, all right. Do people struggle with that? Do people fight that at all, saying, like, I don't want my tax dollars to fund this? Is that something you find?
It's definitely a concern that people have. I'm quite kind of new to you being in the UK as a Catholic, and we've been through a lot of time, so I'm really getting to a point now where I'm going to be able to get more settled and get more involved in these issues. But definitely a concern, and obviously we're not enjoying that it is a reality. However, at this point, there's a level of entrenchment of policy into the UK system and where the culture is, kind of from a postmodern culture that we're in. I think only any change that we would see would have to come from a change in the culture and a change in the outlook and on abortion, which I think is also true for the USA.
Yeah. I want to say that I believe that change could happen, but with the climate, and I live in a very liberal area, so maybe my my perception is skewed, but I live in a place where you can do it up to 23 weeks, no questions asked. You can literally, within a mile of each other, choose to save a baby or to terminate a baby. It's unbelievable to me and very, very sad. To kind of move to a little less of a sad topic, do you see religious freedom being talked about as an issue at all? Just in practicing your faith in schools, in the work, just how does that work for you guys?
I think there's definitely a cultural, I don't know if taboo is the right word, but a discomfort that as a Christian and as a Catholic that you feel because unlike the US, where Christianity is still very much a part of the culture and people generally go to church, it's more unusual to find churchgoers, especially in the younger generation. You know, it's not common to see people praying. You know, you would feel a level of being self-conscious to pray, you know, in public at a restaurant. While there is definitely freedom in terms of going to your place of worship, the life of a Catholic, I believe, and the life of a Christian in the UK, I think, is somewhat harder than it is in the USA. And again, to be very careful, you know, with wording, as you know, as Catholics and Christians, you know, we are a minority now, I do think. And
No, that's okay. And, you know, we are actually running out of time. And so I just want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been so interesting. And I can foresee me asking you to come on again. I know people are going to love it. So...
Well, I hope I've been helpful. Yes. I'm definitely not an expert on these topics.
No, well, just thank you so much. And I know everybody is going to appreciate it. So, but you can say goodbye to everybody if you'd like.
Goodbye, everybody, and thank you for having me on the show, Rosalie Contreras.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.